You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Now, sometimes you've just got to put 10p coins into a Time Crisis 2 machine in Aberystwyth Pier, complete the game, and then tell everyone that you've completed Time Crisis 2 for a pound, which is factually correct. This is Press X to continue. It is the games podcast where no detail is too small for the producers to take the mickey out of the presenters. You say take the mickey. I'm very proud of my achievement of completing Time Crisis 2 for a pound, and I will keep on talking about it. My name is Stefan Powell. Now, normally, at this point, I'd introduce you to my co-host, the actor, the game performer, the legend that is Einel Tomlinson. But sadly, he is still not sadly at all, actually. I'm not sad about it. He is on tour, taking over the UK as an actor, doing an amazing stage show for the Horrible Histories. If you haven't had a chance to see it yet and it's still touring, go and check it out. It's amazing. We've been hearing from Einel with his voice notes, but he's snowed under this week, so we haven't got Einel. And in fact, this has given us a little opportunity to try something new. So this week, my dear Continue Clubbers, my fellow XC Beasts, we are testing a theory that we've had knocking around Press X Towers for a while. And so luckily for us and for you, we're going to try that out. And we have got a willing guinea pig to be with us on this test episode of Press X. So we will welcome back to the Continue Club, the streamer and host, Dave Jewett. Dave, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Do you know I've played that Time Crisis machine?
Have you also played the Time Crisis machine on Aberystwyth Pier?
Yeah, I went to Aberystwyth University, mate. I didn't beat it for a pound, but I'm also not lying about it on the internet. So
well, yeah. I'm not lying about it, am I? Because I'm being factually correct.
I don't think it was 10p when I was playing it.
Oh, right. Then.
I don't know how much of a gap there was between you and I going to that university, but it wasn't 10p a play.
I must have done this in about 2010, 2011. So it might have been a little bit, I don't know, around it knocked down in value maybe by then.
We might have been in the uni at the same time.
So I didn't study there. I was just there on the weekend.
You were just there for the pier.
I was there for the machine. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd heard that I had Time Crisis 2 on the pier. Oh my God, this still Time Crisis 2, let me at it. I tell you what, I was so thrilled with that achievement, Dave, and I still am, clearly, because I talk about it a lot. Now, Dave, people who aren't necessarily every week members of the Continue Club, where are they finding you and your stuff? Tell us.
You can find me across social media at Irregular Dave. If you want to check out my video works, you can check out the YouTube channel EXP. I collaborate with a lot of interesting historians and experts that are far more interesting than me as we break down a selection of games, movies, TV shows, beyond. If you want a weapon expert breaking down weapons of Fallout, if you want an armor historian talking about Kingdom Come Deliverance, if you want a swordmaster talking about Half Sword or someone from the Tank Museum breaking down tanks from movies and games, that's where you go.
Yeah, get yourself on EXP, and we will explain why Dave is a guinea pig for our playtest, if you will, of this new theory we've had very soon. But before we do that, we're starting every episode now with an unsung hero game instead of want to start the episodes off positively. It was a great suggestion from our Discord. Dave, have you got an unsung hero game for me?
I do. I was thinking about this, and I mean, there's going to be a lot, and there's going to be a lot from like the 360 era in particular. Right. But the first thing that popped into my head was Mercenaries Playground of Destruction.
Oh, tell us more about it. I can remember the cover of it right now just by you saying the name.
The handlebar mustache on the cover for the main character.
It's a strong mustache. Tell us why this one. I mean, it's funny. What I love about this feature is that it makes you think of games you haven't thought about for ages. I mean, my first shot was a sports strategy game called Cricket Captain, which was like so random and so niche, but it was what spoke to me. So why did Mercenaries speak to you?
It was just a big daft, it says it around the tin, Playground of Destruction. It was a game by Pandemic, who is a studio of Hidden Gems. They had the Army Men RTS, Little Green Army Men, game. They had the Saboteur, where you'd turn Paris from black and white back into color when you were liberating it.
We literally talked about this with Keza McDonald and Frankie Ward the other day. It was one of our suggestions in the Discord. Keza hated it, but from a Discord, it was Chappers in the Discord, absolutely loved it and had it down as his unsung hero game.
It's underrated. They had Full Spectrum Warrior. They had one of the Lord of the Rings games. They also did Battlefront, the original Battlefront 1 and 2, which is not underrated, but pedigree. But they had loads of stuff. Playground of Destruction, you were just dropped into this sandbox where all these factions vying for power. I think it was North Korea, NATO, a mob sort of faction. And it was very similar to Just Cause with just how much destruction you can do. You can call in vehicles from power drops. You're dropping tanks into the middle of battle. You're dropping weapon crates. And it was just an action movie. It was just an action movie you were playing through, destroying buildings, charging through checkpoints with armored vehicles, dropping rocket launchers and MOABs. And it was just big, daft, exaggerated in every single way. And because it was set in this like DMZ, this the area between North and South Korea, it used that as a way to be like, you can, you know, go as mad as you want with the destruction working for whatever faction you want to play as. But I mean, really, it was a third person shooter with not very good mechanics, but because you got to just throw so many bombs around, blow so much stuff up, call in basically unlimited tanks, as long as you had the money to do so, getting choppers. It was like I said, that level of destruction and sandboxiness that Just Cause had, but with a more like third person shooter grounded, I guess, grittier package. Yeah.
Why do you think it got the plaudits it deserved then, Dave?
Well, I mean, hidden gem. If I have to like look at it objectively, playing it was probably not the best experience. It was very early in like the third person shooter time period. Like there wasn't really any cover to speak about. It was all just like sort of running and shooting from over your own shoulder. It was pretty bare bones in terms of the mechanics, but the spectacle and just it was one of the earliest games that I can recall where you'd have that thought, like, I wonder if I can do X with Y.
Yeah.
And encourage that experiment with the toolkit that it gave you. It was one of the first games that I can recall that allowed me to do that. And it just scaled up further and further and further with more tools and toys that you unlocked and more destruction that you could do. And you just got crazier, more bombastic with it, to the point where it was like a parody of itself with just how crazy the action got. And as a young man, young teenager, that appealed to me.
it spoke to you. So there we have it then. Mercenaries, Playground of Destruction. What do you make of Dave's shout for Unsung Hero Games? There is a channel in our Discord now where you can make your suggestions as well for Unsung Hero Games. Get in there and get part of the conversation. Now, before we get into our still at this point mystery test that we're going to do this week, we've got time for some trivia. So, Dave, this is, you know the score by now. We even though we're trying something new today, we're sticking. We've still got format points that we're sticking to, Dave. You know, we have still got rules here that we're trying to live within.
I respect it.
Thank you very much. You know, we're professional, Dave. You know, what can I say? Now, if you want to make a suggestion, by the way, for a trivia question, get in the Discord. There is a special channel for you to do that. It's a secret channel. I, Nell, and myself can't see the questions you submit, much to our chagrin. So get involved in it that way.
Wants to be a continuer.
The question is this: according to the Guinness World Records, what is the 1986 game Bubble Bobble the first to do, Dave? Something that is now common for many narrative-based games. Bubble Bobble in 1986 was the first to do something that is now common for many narrative-based games. What do we think?
I played Bubble Bobble. I can't remember there being any narrative to it whatsoever. I just remember the little blob guy and shooting bubbles. Was there maybe, could it be one of the first games that allowed you to actually choose a dialogue option or something weird like that? I can't remember dialogue being in Bubble Bobble. That feels crazy.
I was going to go for something like that as well. I'm trying to see where you are on the leaderboard, Dave. So at the moment, you're in 10th place on the leaderboard.
Out of what, though?
Out of 18. No, out of 15. Okay. No, actually, more than that. I can't. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Out of 20, so you're exactly halfway with this one. Yeah, the unadjusted rank would be higher, but we've got an algorithm now.
Whose algorithm?
Our very clever community members in the Discord, Dave, have come up with an algorithm to make sure that this is all evenly weighted.
Oh, I thought you hired a guy whose name was Alan Garithm.
Big Al's been on. Yeah, it's a tricky one, this one. So, 1986, Bubble Bobble was the first to do something that's now common for many narrative games. We will bring you the answer at the end of the show. Right then, okay, so this is the experiment that we're trying. Now, it's basically this little format we've been talking about for ages here on Team Press X. And what we're trying to do, the name is very much a work in progress. We're not reinventing the wheel here, but we're going to try the Press X Top 5. Now, send us ideas for better names, something with X in it or a club of something. The five club, I don't know. You'll think of something better than us. So essentially, it does exactly what we said in the tin. We're going to rank, or we're going to come up with the top five of something. Could be, I don't know, consoles, could be genres, could be games within a certain genre, could be years, could be characters, could be anything you can think of in the gaming space. We're going to come up with the best five things of that category. And so we're trailing this with a subject that's very close to my heart. Now, those of you who know Dave can probably already guess what that is going to be, given that we have chosen him to be our guinea pig for this trial. My fellow servant of the Emperor, Dave Jewett, is here, and we are going to rank the top five Warhammer video game adaptations. That's what we're going to do. If you've played them, you've got thoughts, okay? Share your thoughts, agree with us, disagree with us. If you've not played them, then this might be a sort of something to listen to encourage you to give some of them a go. If you're intrigued, maybe this might open the door for you to say, okay, there are so many out there. Those are the ones. That is the one I am going to try. Maybe this is your gateway to venture down a very deep, a very dark rabbit hole. But come and join us. So, Dave, that's what we're going to do. Is it doable to begin with?
I think so. It's helpful that we're in the golden age of Warhammer video games.
Yes.
There was a period of time when they did not have the best reputation. But over the last, I want to say, 10 years, they've really done well to bring a plethora of new experiences, right a few wrongs. There are some classics that are still great that I don't think will make it into my top five. Mm. I'm looking at the epic RTS that had the Command & Conquer style live action cutscenes.
Oh, was that Final Liberation?
Final Liberation. Yeah,
Liberation.
That was great. Not in my top five, but I needed to worm a shout out in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'm always happy to talk about Warhammer. Always happy to talk about video games. I mean, I'm literally wearing a Dark Angels t-shirt and I'm sat in front of a load of Warhammer art. So I like to think I'm the right guy for the conversation.
Yeah, that's some of my, I have to hide that. I've got so many Horus Heresy novels. They don't all fit on the bookcase. Got a Dark Angel there as well somewhere. Me and Dave WhatsApp many a time about a character in Warhammer 40,000 called Cypher, who's my favourite character. Anyway.
I've got my little Cypher miniature back there.
Look at Johnny painted for me. So that's us sort of setting out our sort of credentials for being part of this conversation. Bro, we would love to know what you make of this, what you think of the list that we come up with. Get involved in the conversation. I'm sure lots of people have tried this before, but this is our first attempt at a Press X Top 5, name TBC. So you talked about Final Liberation. It's interesting with Warhammer. There were games in the 90s that sort of had an essence, a flair, that sort of got some of the emotional side of it or the vibe of Warhammer across, but then there was a gap. And then, like Dave was saying, we've had a 10-year stretch of some really great stuff. Chaos Gate, I think, in the 90s would have been my first one, Dave, I think, in my introduction to Shadow of the Horned Rat. They were quite basic, weren't they? But they were sort of, that's when it started. And then weirdly, as a games company that now basically is the boss of intellectual property, that's what they do, isn't it? Basically leverage that. They had a real period where they wouldn't let people make any games for them, which was odd.
Yeah, I was the same. I remember the PS1 Warhammer fantasy game that was Dark Omen. I think it was just after Horned Rat. And like you said, there was a bunch of RTS games, Space Hulk games.
Yeah.
That still has one of like the best splash screen intros on any game. With just the Space Marine screaming in like crushed 8-bit audio is still so good. And then, you know, in the 2000s, really, especially on the 40K front, as soon as the 2000s rolled in, they came in very strong with, well, again, maybe underrated. I don't I don't actually think it is. I replayed it a few years ago. Fire Warrior.
Fire Warrior was fantastic. In fact, you know what? Let's get straight. Let's start with Fire. So Fire Warrior is a first-person shooter. It was out in that early sort of that noughties period. What was interesting, if you were into 40K, was that it came from a standpoint of a faction that hadn't been getting a lot of love. They're called the Tau. And what was interesting about it, if you are from a non-40K background, is it had amazing cast. Like, what a cast in Fire Warrior. You had some, like, real big names in there. Are you saying the Fire Warrior, though, is not in the conversation to make the top your top five, Dave?
It's not in my top five. I don't know if it's in your top five. If I hadn't replayed it fairly recently, it might have been.
Right, because did it not stand the top test of time?
It didn't. It really didn't. And as a Dark Angels fan, the Astartes you start fighting are Dark Angels as well. So
yeah,
it was down the list for me. But it's quite funny replaying that, and you're like, Fire Warriors are the warrior cast of the Tau, but the Fire Warrior you play as is like one of the strongest characters in all of 40K canon because of just what he's able to accomplish across the game. It's similar to Bolt Gun. But that's like sort of tongue-in-cheek Doom-esque.
Yeah.
Like they sort of play on that. But the character in Fire Warrior, he's able to get all these Astartes, use all these bolt guns, take on like demons. And I think that was when it was an interesting look at like the real absurdity of any Warhammer character that actually has a name. That's when things go a bit crazy. If the character that you're playing as is a named character, or if any character in fiction, the books, anything, if it's a named character, their power level is like at a zero to anything else. That name carries so much power. But I played it back in the day. It was the thing that damaged it as well is it marketed itself as a Halo killer. Now those are big boots to fill. I'm a Warhammer fanboy through and through. A Fire Warrior is not a Halo killer, my guy. I'm sorry, even the most Even the biggest Tau fans can't say that PS2's Fire Warrior is going to beat Xbox's Halo Combat Evolved.
I take that point, right? But this is 2003 is when it came out. But and I mentioned the voice cast. Tom Baker is the narrator. Brian Blessed is in it. Sean Pertwee is in it. Like it was was it the first Warhammer first-person shooter? Or certainly, I mean, there was a Space Hulk, wasn't there? But like, it's certainly the first one in that sort of modern AA, AAA space.
What you would today consider a first-person shooter, Fire Warrior was the first one.
I don't think it's going to make our top five, but it's certainly worth an honourable mention for being the sort of intro to Games Workshop games trying to make it into the sort of mainstream space, I think. Now, interestingly, have you got a five locked? Because I've got three that I think are definitely in, and then I've got two I've got two spaces open.
I have a soft five that I could be argued in now, but I think we'll probably end up with some of the same ones, potentially in different spots.
Yeah.
But I've got a five in mind.
Should we start with Fire Warrior is an honourable mention. Mm-hmm. There would be loads we talk with here that don't make it in. Should we start? Well, you start. You two. Which one would you want to definitely to get in there?
Number five, I'm going to put Vermintide 2.
Right. So you've gone Vermintide over Darktide, or have you got Darktide in there as well?
No, Darktide hasn't made my top five.
Fine. So tell us about why Vermintide 2. So Vermintide, it's people who haven't played Vermintide, the floor's yours, Dave.
So Vermintide and Vermintide 2 and then Darktide, the Tide games are basically, it's the Left 4 Dead formula. You and a group of fellow players, you cooperate to get through a map fighting hordes of enemies. There's special types of enemies. You need to accomplish certain objectives to get through the map. It's all point A to point B, and the action ramps up the further you go. Vermintide has five base classes. You've got the Wood Elf Ranger, the Empire Witch Hunter, the Empire Soldier, the Dwarf, and the Fire Mage. So you have five very, very different play styles. So the Witch Hunter starts off with a rapier and a belt of pistols. The Dwarf excels in close range combat with his big axe. The Fire Mage obviously does fire spells. The Soldier's a bit more of an all-rounder. It can use a shield, and it's that balance of blocking, parrying, attacking. It's much more melee focused than Left 4 Dead is. Melee's a huge part of that game to get the zombies off you. And the biggest change in compared to Left 4 Dead, it's not hordes of zombies, it's hordes of rats. Ratmen, yeah. Skaven. Vermintide 2 adds more Nurgle worshippers and Chaos Knights, but it's the rats. I love Skaven. They're so fun. They're one of my favorite Warhammer factions across all of the types of Warhammer that you can play. I love a little rat man. And Vermintide 2 is just, like, I love Darktide. Darktide is the 40K entry that's got a bit more in the way of gunplay. It's obviously set in the far future. The classes are different. You've got your veteran and you know, they're all flavored to 40K. But the character that Vermintide has, the banter between the characters, because they are characters, they're named characters, whereas Darktide, they're classes, and you project your own personality onto them and can tweak things in the character creator. But because the Vermintide 2 classes are their own characters, which can then change throughout the course of an adventure, you can diversify them by giving them subclasses, like turning the Witch Hunter into a crazy fanatic, shaved head and a flail, diving into combat, the Dwarf becomes a slayer, and their dialogue options can change and bounce off of each other. It's just the level of character in it is really so much fun. I think it's because it's had more time to cook as well, it is a bit more of a polished game. Mm. And there's a really well-balanced progression through Vermintide 2 as well. Different weapons that you can get, different skills. It's just a more well-rounded game. And like I said, just fun little rat guys.
Yeah.
Just always a good time.
When the first Vermintide came out as well, like Dave was saying, so Left 4 Dead is the obvious comparison. What was interesting about Vermintide, the original, but Vermintide 2, I think, iterated quite nicely on that first one, was that it was melee combat as well, Dave, right? So there was less focus on gunplay, which was kind of which was unique at the time. And I think it's very good at creating a sense of place, which I think I'm gonna rank that quite highly when I'm thinking of Warhammer games and trying to put them in my top five. Because the reason you want to play these is because you want to feel like you're there and that you're experiencing the world, the grimdark of the future, or whatever it might be. And this is a game that is very good at doing that. And I think one of the Tide games needs to be in there. I really enjoyed Dark Tide, but I bounced off it because I didn't have enough people to play it with, I think. Maybe it was the reason why. And I think Vermintide probably deserves to be recognised as the originator of the Warhammer version of the Tide, you know, game. So I think I'm on board with putting Vermintide 2 in the five. I don't think you're going to get much argument with me. So we're going to put... Vermintide 2 was one of my... mine as well. So I'm going to write that in. So we're happy with Vermintide 2, Div.
Yeah, deserves its place. And okay. I can't not shout out the Skaven.
Yeah.
It'd be cool if they actually existed, but...
Would it be cool? I don't know if it would be cool, actually.
They're like, deny any existence of the Ratman. What do you mean you're never 10 feet, more than 10 feet away from a rat guy who wants to crunch down a strange green crystal and create some sort of mad invention to attack you with?
Yeah.
Never heard of it, mate.
Thank you. I'll dodge that. Thank you very much. This one's obviously going in, so I think we should probably talk about Space Marine 2, right? Mm-hmm. And are you going to argue for the first one to go in or the second? So Space Marine 2 is the all-action sequel that came out. We reviewed it here on the podcast. Einel is in it. He voices the Dark Angel in the online and the multiplayer element of it. He does an amazing job of it as well. The fact that he didn't tell me that he was doing that and he knew for so long shows how... So if you're a casting director, that man is never going to break your NDA, my friend, because he didn't even tell me he was in it. But I think Space Marine 2... I think sort of is a no-brainer, Dave, I think, in terms of being in there. So Space Marine 2, it's a brutal, visceral, third-person combat action title, stunning visuals, the production quality. What they've been able to do visually with that game is incredible. It sort of straddles this AA, AAA line in the sense of it was made by a smaller company, but it looks and feels like a Call of Duty type title. You might criticize it for being, some people will criticize it for being quite narrow in its focus. The campaign's not overly long. For me, it's perfectly timed. Anything more than that, and I'm starting to lose focus. The online is fine. Not amazing, maybe, but it's fine. It's doing a job. People are still playing it. And there is more content coming for it all the time. But I think what it does better than any game, and the first one did a good job, the original Space Marine did a good job, but it lifts on it again, is it really gives you that power fantasy of being what it would feel like to be a Space Marine. You are a superhuman, you know, 7-foot beast walking around with the most powerful armor and weapons you can get your hands on, super intelligent, knows no fear, and it allows you to play out that fantasy amazingly well. Fantastic voice acting as well, and a story arc that has gone beyond the games themselves, which is an achievement, because a lot of these games are quite evocative of the space, but are throwaway, whereas this story has made such an impact that it's now been reflected in the novels and tabletop games that people are playing all over the world. So for me, Space Marine 2 is a no-brainer. We're not ranking them 1 to 5. If we were, I think it would probably be in at number 1 or 2, Dave. So any arguments over Space Marine 2 being in there?
No, Space Marine 2 has to be in there. It's without a shadow of a doubt, one of the best Warhammer 40,000 video games. Both, like I said, the action, the spectacle of it, you can tell that so much passion was put into it. Like, I, back before I worked at GameSpot, I made a video trying to find all the Easter eggs and all the little details in it. And that attention to detail is something that you can pick apart and see them one by one, but they all come together to make it feel like you're in a Warhammer setting, which is a horrible thing to actually consider. No one would actually want to be in Warhammer 40,000. It'd be awful. But the environments, the scale of everything, how even down to like how the humans react to you when you walk by, as if you're this sort of otherworldly angel. You're the angel of death. But it all comes together to make such an incredible package. The action is just so fluid. It's got like a little bit of Souls in there with the parrying and blocking and deflecting, ripostes, using your pistol in close combat. And that's what I think really separates it from the original Space Marine. I loved the original Space Marine. And before Space Marine 2 came out, I went and replayed it. And you can only do that before playing Space Marine 2.
Mm.
Like, Space Marine 2 enhances basically everything about the original Space Marine.
Yeah. No,
I was sort of gutted that Mark Strong wasn't coming back, but that was put aside after I was like, no, this is Titus now. I can't recall the voice actor's name who voices Titus. But he quickly, I was like, yeah, no, you're absolutely nailing it. You know, and it feels like you're embodying a Space Marine. Going back, it felt like Mark Strong maybe might have been aware of Warhammer, but didn't embody it quite as much as what we got in Space Marine 2. And again, just that no other game makes you feel as intense as Space Marine 2. It makes you feel as much like a Space Marine.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, you feel invincible. You feel dangerous. You feel like every inch of your body is like a lethal weapon, and you're just mauling your way through bugs. It's just endless.
But there's so many of them. The horde mechanic is amazing, and I think it's brilliant because it straddles the line very well of introducing people to this space. It's fun to play from the off, whether you care or know about Warhammer, whether you don't. But there are those little nods to the lore. There is a moment towards the end, without giving it away, that a flag is raised in a certain way that is evocative of a very special image that was on a book called Rogue Trader back in the 80s. And the symbolism behind all that makes nerds like us happy, but also just looks really cool. And so it did both jobs, straddled it so fantastically well. It's super impressive. Just walking around the ship and just seeing the air coming out of your backpack just made me feel, it's just such tiny, amazing attention to detail. So look, we could wax lyrical about Space Marine 2 and Einel's in it. So if we didn't put it in, he wouldn't be happy. So Space Marine 2 is in. Right, okay, where do you want to go next? Do we want to talk about, which of the strategy games do we want to talk about? Oh, actually, you know, before we put the next one in, some mentions of other titles out there that you might want to try that I don't think are going to make the top 5. Feel free to disagree with me. I don't think any of the Blood Bowl video game adaptations should make the top five.
No, I agree. It's very niche. So it's Warhammer American Football. If that sounds like your bag. Great.
Warhammer American Football. I love playing Blood Bowl. I play in a Blood Bowl league. Shout out the Hot Bobs Blood Bowl league to Johnny and the gang. I lost in the quarterfinals this year again. But I do have... Hold the phone. This is my Hot Bobs Welsh Coach of the Year trophy.
Congrats.
There's only two Welsh coaches, so you know it's a one and two chance. So I love Blood Bowl, right? But I think that the video game adaptations, the original work, when I used to play it on my tablet, I thought this is great, this is fantastic. But the attempt to get that onto consoles or on PCs, it feels a bit clunky. I think it lacks the, it hasn't quite nailed the humour of Blood Bowl, the silliness of it. And I know a lot of people play it and it's very popular. There's Blood Bowl, there's Blood Bowl 2, there's Blood Bowl 3. They're all out there and they're perfectly serviceable. If you've seen Warhammer American Football, you think, I fancy playing that and I don't want to get into the painting and the models and all that stuff, then you can play it and it's fine. But I think there are better titles out there, Dave. We agreed on that.
Yeah. And you speaking of nailing the silliness of a setting, I think the same thing about the Necromunda games. No Necromunda game has felt really like the setting of Necromunda and how silly it is and absurd it is. Like playing Necromunda on the tabletop, doing all these goofy things and like fielding guys that their whole job is to like stir a big pot of soup. I don't know how you'd actually put that into a game.
Yeah.
It's just not nailed that real, like the almost goofy absurdity of Necromunda. Like the Necromunda games were a bit too serious.
Yeah, I think I would say the same about their attempts at Mordheim as well. I think they've fallen a bit flat, which is a shame. I loved Mordheim. Mordheim was a skirmish version where you'd be chasing around a damned city, trying to dig up these bits of warp stone that had fallen from the sky and sell them for money. So it's like, you know, you had a band of brigands basically having skirmishes, having fights with Skaven, with the rats, with other war bands, and that could be amazing sort of RPG elements that. But again, the game, well, there were two games, isn't there? There's the Mordheim City of the Damned, which is again just a bit clunky, fell a bit flat for me, Dave. It's turn-based, didn't have the vibrancy and the colour that you see on tabletop reflected, I think, in the game. There is the mobile version, though, Mordheim Warband Skirmish, which you can also play on the Switch, which I've actually got coloured in orange and could be a possible contender, because I think if for casual players, it has got a bit of the colour and a bit of the flavour of it. Because I loved Mordheim as a setting, but maybe not necessarily like Dave was saying, the Necromunda games is also a skirmish game set in a big horrible city. They haven't quite quite nailed it like some of these other ones have. Okay, so put your next one forward then. So we've got Vermintide 2, Space Marine 2 so far. Sequels are big.
So I would actually go to bat for Rogue Trader, the CRPG.
Okay, so it's an RPG relatively recently, right? It's a top-down isometric action RPG, right?
Yeah, so people might be more familiar with games like Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
But so Rogue Trader, you play as a Rogue Trader. For people that might be unfamiliar, Rogue Trader is a position of power in Warhammer 40,000 that's basically insurmountable. There are very few people that can tell a rogue trader what to do. Their whole job is to go to the frontiers of the galaxy and like help settle new worlds or explore reaches that might be just on the edge of the Imperium's control. But it's a perfect setting for a CRPG because you get to make all these decisions and do all these bizarre things with outside of the confines that another Warhammer game might have. Like you're not necessarily needing to remain in the rules of the Imperium. You might not have to follow the same rules as a member of the Administratum or Imperial Guard or even a Space Marine. So you can do things like use alien technology, you know, explore a romance with an alien woman.
Hello.
Everything's on the table. You might, you know, the Inquisition might be like, hey, I don't love that you're doing this, but you're also like, you know, I got to take things on balance. You're sort of running that chaotic good kind of line. So by all means, develop your crush on the Eldar, and we'll see if they feel the same way.
Some people like pointy ears, Dave. You know, they're into it, and that's fine.
Yeah,
you know, no shaming here.
I've got no problem with that.
Yeah,
but I mean, my rogue trade didn't go that way, but I did play it as a bit more towed the line of the heretical nature.
Yeah.
But because you get to make all these decisions, because there's so much character into it, it's actually an incredible starting point for Warhammer. As you go down all the dialogue trees and the, like, the narrator starts like sharing the setting, your objective, it's got like a really broad glossary across the game. So if you like someone playing Warhammer for the first time might not necessarily know what the warp is.
Mm.
And if you highlight the word warp during a conversation, a little box will pop up saying, oh, the warp is basically like, it's also called the immaterium. It's how ships travel faster than light. It's basically hell dimension, and people can, you know, if a shield goes down, they get absolutely devoured by demons.
You're screwed.
By just fast traveling.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the game like drip feeds all that knowledge to you in a way that really helps bed in the core of Warhammer 40,000. I'm a sucker for CRPGs, creating your character and developing them, finding like new weapons and equipment, getting that party together, mm-hmm. increasing their loyalty to you, and building like a really nice, cohesive group of characters that can take you from quest to quest, explore all the side quests, go through the story, and you get such a variety. And there's been a couple of DLCs now, so you've got like the Arbetes, you have a Navigator that's like super psychically powerful, hard to look at, weird third eye. You have the Eldar Ranger, like super light, strong sniper, a Sister of Battle, a Psyker, a Space Marine. You've got a character called Abelard, who you can tell everyone just, his job is to like use a shotgun and announce you whenever you arrive. So you've also got all this status. So when you play the game, you're sort of feeling like you've got a bit of swagger, you know? You're like,
yeah.
You're walking into a room and everyone's looking at you, you're like, yeah, I'm important. Everyone look at me and do what I tell you. So it's like, it's just a really strong setting for a CRPG.
Yeah.
The only negative is it's quite deep in terms of like the skills. There's far too many skills. A lot of them will have like a paragraph telling you that the sort of 0.2% bonus you'll get.
Hmm.
But if you wanted to distill it down a bit and just be like, I'm going to take four characters with bolt guns and shoot anything with a chaos mark on it, you can play it that way.
Yeah.
If you decide you want to go the heretical route and become a heretic yourself, you can play it that way too. Your crew might not be happy with you, but you can do that.
Yeah. It's interesting because there are a couple of these sort of isometric top-down RPG style ones with different forms of RPG. So Rogue Trader, there's Inquisitor as well, isn't there? That's Inquisitor Martyr is an option. Mechanicus is different, but in that sort of aesthetically sort of the same. So let's put Rogue Trader in there with a quick, I'm going to pencil that one in there for now, because I think, I don't know if it's a lock, but it was a good sell from you there. And as an introduction to the space as well, I think it's interesting. Should we talk about the strategy games? Because there's two big franchises, aren't there? You've got your RTS one.
Both getting new games soon.
Both getting new games soon. So the RTS one, let's start with a real-time strategy one. Or is it a MOBA now? We'll get on to that. Let's talk about Dawn of War, right? So there are three Dawn of War games. Dawn of War 4, like Dave says, is coming. Dawn of War, the first one, gave Warhammer fans a cutscene at the beginning that people still talk about to this day, and sort of was a classic sort of RTS, bit of base building, a really strong story, fun gameplay, elements of depth in there, introduce you to characters, again, like Titus in Space Marine 2, that now lives on beyond the game itself. Character you played, was in the game a lot, Gabriel Angelos, he was there and thereabouts. Then they had number two, which is my shout to put in, Dave.
That's my favorite Dawn of War as well. Everyone says it's Dawn of War 1, and they talk about Dark Crusade and Winter Assault, and like, yeah, they're great, but I prefer Dawn of War 2.
Yeah, so Dawn of War 2 had tweaked the gameplay mechanics slightly, made it less about base building and more about how your squad interacted with the terrain and stuff, which I thought was really clever, actually. I've never played anything like that before, and I don't think I've played much like it since, really. But what was fantastic about Dawn of War 2, again, was good in the first one as well. In my opinion, Dave, the setting, the way it was so evocative and sort of made you feel like you were there and you were part of this, I thought was brilliant. Had me hooked. And then Dawn of War 3 came along, which is a big, beautiful brash game, but then introduced these elements of MOBA games, you know, like League of Legends or whatever, where you had named characters doing crazy things as well as sort of your bog standard troops. And that was quite divisive, wasn't it, number three? Even though on the surface of it should be a better game, it didn't quite stick the landing, did it?
No, especially on the multiplayer. Like, you couldn't really tell in the campaign. And I love an RTS campaign.
Mm.
But when you played it online, the MOBA elements really, you could really feel them. And it was quite a frustrating game to play. I don't think they ever really addressed the balance of it. But there were, you know, very visible lanes of attack. You looked at some of the maps and it's like, that looks like Dota from above. And like you said, it was less about tactically using your individual units of like, oh, I'm going to field devastators with rocket launchers because that guy's fielded a tank. It was more about, I need to occupy as many of their little mobs as possible so I can make Gabriel Angelos do a big front flip and then a big spin, kill them all, and I've got lane control. It was more about just making room for your main guys rather than using every unit in a tactical, thoughtful manner.
So are we happy then that, I mean, I think a Dawn of War game has got to go in because it had such 100%. An impact. I think it made Warhammer games cool again, because they had that period where, like Dave was saying, they didn't make many for a while and they'd stopped making them. And then this came back and it's like, oh no, not, this doesn't feel just like an IP add-on. This feels like a legitimate game in and of itself that is successful and is good and happens to be about Warhammer, and it told a really good story. So we're happy with the Dawn of War, and we're going to both say two.
Yeah, I think I am prepared to weather the comments and arguments that people are going to say, well, no, Dawn of War 1 is better, and personally...
And they'll say that because it's more classically RTS, right? In the sense that you're base building and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but like you said, it's enhanced the canon. There hasn't been another video game that I can think of that's got an entire chapter of Space Marines, the Blood Ravens, into canon. To the point there was even like the ending of the original Space Marine game, Blood Ravens turn up.
They do. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So for that alone, it deserves a shout. And I personally prefer the gameplay of Dawn of War 2. It's very, very Company of Heroes-esque as well.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It was both Relic. But hey, Dawn of War 1 was a great game, and they both had amazing expansions. It's not as if Stefan here is saying, Dawn of War 3 is actually underrated and it should go on the list. So
yeah,
let's agree on that.
Yeah, I think it's one or two, and I think Dawn of War 2. And interestingly, have you got any expectations for 4? I mean, when they announced Total War 40K, which we'll come on to talk about Total War soon, probably next, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for that. I'm in. And it sort of took my attention away from Dawn of War 4, actually.
It sounds like Dawn of War 4 is returning to Dawn of War 1 a bit. The thing that I've been most excited about is they're showing the cool like sync kill animations again, instead of just you guys falling down. And they're adding, you know, a new twist to it, like the Mechanicus is coming in. The orc stuff that I've seen around Dawn of War 4 feels suitably orky.
Yeah.
And it feels like they are embracing the unique traits and aesthetics and personality of the factions a bit more. And that was, I think, another thing that was missing in Dawn of War 3. There was very few elements that really allowed you to feel like you're commanding orcs or space marines or Eldar.
I think the thing that people will no doubt say about Dawn of War 1 is by the time you add all the expansions in is that you were getting a real flavour of a lot of the different factions, right? Because you could play pretty much as everyone by the end, you know, because of all the different factions that came in. And otherwise, you tend to end up, there tends to be in the strategy 40K games, there tends to be orcs, tends to be tyrannids, there tends to be Eldar, and there tends to be chaos, and that's sort of that, isn't it? Whereas, you know, in the first one, it was a bit of everyone in there. So, but we're sticking with our guns. We're going Dawn of War 2. Right, before we talk about Total War, because obviously we're going to have to talk about Total War, there's going to be a Total War game in the top five, Dave. I think that's pretty obvious. Yeah. A shout out for a couple of other things. A sort of what could have been, Dave. Did you ever play Eternal Crusade?
I loved Eternal Crusade.
What could have been?
That was the closest we ever got to Battlefield Warhammer.
It was nearly there.
Which is something I'd love.
It was nearly there. So Eternal Crusade, if you don't know what it is, it's now a defunct, massively multiplayer online game. It was this ambitious vision of basically real 40K, but in a virtual setting. So persistent warfare, you'd like Dave was saying, Battlefront, the Star Wars games, but always mix Battlefront and Battlefield. Battlefront, the Star Wars games, but 40K, but it would be online all the time. Large scale PvP battles, loads of iconic factions. It really captured the idea of continuous 40K conflict. I mean, the slogan for years, Warhammer 40,000 was, 41st millennium, there is only war, right? And that's the sort of idea that it was there for. It wasn't executed especially well. Technical issues throughout his life, therefore didn't get the player base up there to feel like he was busy, and so it sort of flopped and failed. But what could have been, Dave? So close.
So close. I fondly remember that game. The balancing, they never really addressed, especially when they added the orcs and Eldar as well. But it was so much fun, like piling into a rhino with your mates and like attacking objectives, like you said, like a Battlefront or a Battlefield, like objective-driven gameplay as a Space Marine or an Orc or a Chaos Space Marine, character customization. The gameplay was very similar to the original Space Marine, so it felt a bit more accessible as well, but on a big, much larger multiplayer scale. Yeah, the balance and stuff wasn't great. I think they would have needed a bit more time to cook than they probably ever had. So that's why they, you know, is sadly no longer with us. But fond memories of Eternal Crusade.
Yeah. Another couple of sort of honourable mentions. I don't think they're going to make it in. I haven't played a lot of them, so I'm coming at this from a position of ignorance, and maybe you'll argue that some of them should be in, but they're reviewed very heavily for people who like this sort of thing. But the Slytherin games, they're a company that makes strategy games, turn-based strategy games often. So we're talking about games like Armageddon, Battle Sector. There's a Hex, 4x Hex game called Gladius. All of those are reviewed very highly and very well amongst people who like that particular genre of strategy games, Dave. Like I said, maybe I'm coming at it from a position of ignorance. I haven't played enough of them, so therefore I'm holding my hands up. But they haven't had the sort of the impact. If they had any impact, I would have played them. And so therefore not going to make my top five. Any of them making yours?
Not my top five. I've played a bit of Gladius. I'm mostly just too stupid to play 4X strategy games. Yeah. Like Civ or anything. They just get away from me too fast.
But it's interesting because it's a 4X strategy game. And of course, usually diplomacy is a big element of a 4X strategy game. But the diplomacy layer has been sort of stripped out of it, isn't it? And that's sort of unique, I suppose.
Yeah, like Civ will have scientific victory, cultural victory, diplomatic victory, military victory. Take everything that isn't military and chop maybe 60% out of it and put that percentage into military, and that's closer to Gladius.
Yeah. So honourable mentions. And like you say, if you disagree or agree with any of this stuff, then feel free, let us know, get in the comments, share it. Should one of the Slytherin games be in our top five? We're open to that conversation. Let us know. Let's talk Total War then. There are three games. Warhammer, Total War. Does exactly what it says in the tin. Medieval, Rome, Warhammer. And I think what was interesting is when the first one came out, I was lucky enough to go behind the scenes at Creative Assembly, the people who make it, to see how they were making it. It was very exciting. What it changed about the Total War franchise, in my opinion, Dave, and broadened the horizons of it, is it really introduced powerful individual characters into a sort of grand strategy game where you'd either do the map stuff, which is what I prefer, that element of the game, and then you've got the battlefield stuff, the, you know, like being a Roman emperor type stuff. But all of a sudden you've got a flying eagle with a man with a massive hammer on top of it, or, you know, you've got a giant troll or an orc boss, war boss or whatever.
Balthazar Gelt flying around turning everyone into gold and you can't do anything about it.
What can you do about that, you know? So it certainly sort of added the fantastical element and was very good. There have been three, Warhammer Total War, Total War 2, and Warhammer Total War 3. Which of these, I'm assuming we're putting one of them in, right? Because again, I think what it did was Dawn of War started it, Warhammer Total War took a beloved franchise, added a Warhammer layer, and people still loved it. And in fact, they loved it even more than they did previously. So I think that's a big win.
Well, I think Total War Warhammer 3 is the best shout because it also, if you've got the other games, contains Total War Warhammer 1 and 2, especially with the Immortal campaign. You can... Every new game slowly brought everything from the previous game into the fold. So you get the complete picture in Total War Warhammer 3. You can play all the factions. I love Total War Warhammer 2 because they brought in the Skaven. Yeah. I can play Skaven in Total War Warhammer 3 now against factions that are only in the third title. And it's the most polished. It has the most, you know, DLC and content that's been drip fed into it. They were able to do a really interesting thing with, they brought an entire faction to life that originally didn't have like too much lore around it. The Kingdom of Cathay in the east, where they now have like dragons and gunpowder units shooting from balloons. There like a lot of that is Creative Assembly's creation that they've made in collaboration with Games Workshop, but they've been able to bring them to life more than the old lore Warhammer Fantasy books ever did, because they've got this really great, authentic, very passion filled IP now. Like they're trusted to do this. And like I said, the variety of playstyles that you can have in Total War Warhammer 3 now, if you want to just be like, I want to get a big blob of guys that hit things with axe, great. Khorne Warriors. If you want to engage with like guerrilla fighting, maybe Skaven are a bit more you. You like cavalry. You've got the magical Knights of Bretonnia. They've got cavalry from the sky. Cavalry from every angle. If you like horses, Bretonnia is for you. Visit beautiful Bretonnia. There's like, so there is something for everyone in sort of Warhammer 3, no matter your playstyle. Yeah. And I think people have been, oh, well, I do really love the historical. Is this taking development time away from historical? I get that. And I love the historical titles as well. But I also love getting a big blob of enemies together and casting a Purples and a Xerxes at them and just seeing them all melt. And I can't do that in Rome or medieval or Shogun.
That didn't happen in 15th century London, did it? You know, it didn't happen.
No, the Napoleon's army didn't have a wizard with them.
No.
But if they did, then that's the Empire. So you've got that playstyle too.
It's interesting that that I tend to lean more 40K, so the future gazing Warhammer, as opposed to the old stuff, or the sort of the more the fantasy element of it, especially when this world, these stories kind of ended and a new setting sort of emerged. And I haven't gone over to learn that side of the space yet, because my brain can only hold so much information and I can't quite do it. So it's, you could argue, well, hang on, we've already got a strategy game in there. We're putting two in there. Well, I think this is totally different, a different type of game to Dawn of War 2. It's grand strategy, so there is more working on a map. You're moving your armies around, all of that sort of stuff. And it's got a sprawling campaign, so much options and details in you. If you're into this sort of game, there's a way to play it. I haven't played 3, I played 2. It didn't stick with me because I didn't find the faction that I needed to really get my teeth into. And so I suppose the beauty of this one is that you've got a wealth of factions to choose from to find the one that you can really sort of relate with and play and enjoy. So Warhammer Total War 3 going in.
Beautiful.
So, Dave, we now have 4 of our 5. Well, one with a question mark. So the 3 of them I was on board with. So Vermintide 2, Space Marine 2. This is in no particular order, by the way. Space Marine 2, Vermintide 2, Dawn of War 2, Warhammer Total War 3, and then you've still got a question mark on Rogue Trader. So is there anything else that we could put in instead of Rogue Trader? The things that sort of honourable mentions. What about Bolt Gun? You mentioned it earlier. Totally different to any of the other games that we've talked about. It's a third-person shooter with all... It's like, doesn't take itself a bit seriously. It's like a Doom. It's a fun Doom version of a style of a game. It's called Bolt Gun. It's fast. It's arcadey. It's a bit silly. You don't really learn anything about the setting, but it's a good way to kill an hour. Does that deserve a shout instead of Rogue Trader or not?
I mean, personally, I wouldn't put... I really loved Bolt Gun. It has a lot of charm, a lot of personality. It further satirizes and accentuates a setting that is already crazy, over-the-top satire. But I wouldn't want to play Bolt Gun more than once, whereas I've done multiple characters in Rogue Trader.
Okay. So, And we've got
still shout for Rogue Trader personally.
And I suppose you could say that Vermintide 2 is our first person shooter.
Yeah.
In terms of the genre, so fair enough. As I mentioned, we don't have a mobile game. Now, 40K Tacticus seems to be going down quite well. It's sort of a bit more cartoony in its imagery, but it's really clean, it's easy to play, short and punchy missions. There's a little bit of monetization in there, but that is true, I suppose you could say, of all of that genre of games. Lots of factions, easy to pick up and play, nice entry points. What do we think about Tacticus?
It is if you've got some money to put behind it, or you're prepared to grind a lot. Like, it is one of those games that you don't have to put money in, but you need a good amount of luck and a good amount of hours to put in. For a mobile game, I think it, it's a lot of fun. It's got a good 40K setting. I've played a bunch of it, but again, I bounced off it because it did feel like I was doing the same thing again and again, just to try and unlock the next Death Guard unit that I wanted for my mob. It does the good, like, multiplayer raids, and there's like a fun clan system. So I know a lot of people still play it, but I've bounced off of Tacticus. Although, like, it's probably is the best mobile game if you're
Let's, because there was Lost Crusade as well, but that sort of persistent game. But again, that I bounced off that. To be fair,
the only other one to shout is Mechanicus.
Okay, talk to me.
It does have it's got really strong RTS dungeon exploration. You know, you're building up your Skitarii, your Magos. It really embodies the Adeptus Mechanicus and the creepy flesh is weak mantra that they have.
So
and
weird.
This can also be said for Darktide. The soundtrack slaps. They've both got absolutely S-rank soundtracks. I have put more hours into Rogue Trader personally, but I know Mechanicus, a lot of people love Mechanicus. I had a lot of fun with Mechanicus. There's a Mechanicus 2 coming out, which I think has addressed some of my issues that I had with the original Mechanicus. But again, I did play more Rogue Trader.
Yeah.
And Rogue Trader did allow me to fall in love with an Eldar, which, don't tell the Inquisition I said that, but maybe that's what cinches it.
Dave, that's our secret. They're very much not listening to us. They're not listening.
That's what they want you to think.
Yeah, that's what they want us to think. I think it's got to, if it would go in there, it would go instead of Rogue Trader. And I think you've made a good sell in terms of what Rogue Trader does really well. So if you're new to this and you want to learn a little bit more about the world, or the setting, I suppose, rather, then Rogue Trader does think will do a broader job of that for you. The very first Warhammer 40,000 book was called Rogue. The game started off as being called Rogue Trader, which is what, and then so it's a neat sort of touching stone with that from back in the 80s or whatever.
And listeners might be familiar with games like Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah,
both in
exactly.
the same genre. So if you liked Baldur's Gate 3 and are interested in Warhammer, it's a very easy transition to go from a game like Baldur's Gate 3 to Rogue Trader. They're vastly different games from different companies with different design ethoses, but similar genre. You'll be on familiar footing if you tried out Rogue Trader there.
And I think this list gives us a neat mix of different genres. Okay, so Vermintide 2, that's our FPS style game. Space Marine 2, that's our third person action title. Rogue Trader, that's giving us our RPG kicks. Dawn of War 2, that's giving us our real-time strategy fix, and then Warhammer Total War 3 is our grand strategy title. And also it's nice to have another game in there from the fantasy setting, so it's not four 40k games.
It could have easily been that.
It could have easily been and one fantasy title. So look, let us know what you think of our list then. Do you agree with us? Do you disagree with us? Should we have swapped one out for the other? Let us know. We'd love to know what you think. So Vermintide 2, Space Marine 2, Rogue Trader, Dawn of War 2, Warhammer Total War 3. That is our Press X top 5 Warhammer video games of all time. Dave, it's been a pleasure having you with us. Just before I let you go, what are you most excited about? We know that there are games coming out. What are you most excited about? What is coming next in this that might contend and knock one of these off our list?
Ooh, I'm very intrigued by both Dawn of War 4, but especially Total War 40K. I was always someone that didn't really know how they were gonna transfer 40K, like, you know, skirmish battles, like mainly ranged combat, and transplant that into the Total War engine, where a lot of that is, you know, lines of infantry flanking melee combat. I'm still unsure, but I am exceptionally optimistic because I know that, you know, Creative Assembly has a pedigree with this stuff now. And I hope they really stick the landing and make it feel like a 40K game and make it feel different to Total War Warhammer 3. But I'm also very excited about the follow-up to Rogue Trader, Dark Heresy, made by Owlcat as well, so another CRPG. I'm very excited for that. And I'll also be there on the ground floor at Dawn of War 4. It's a good time to be into Warhammer and to be into video games.
Yeah.
And we got Borgun 2. That looks like a lot of fun. You get Sister Battle in there as well. Adeptus Sororitas have made their entry.
So many things coming. I think, like Dave, I am excited about Total War 40K. I prefer the side of that game as two games, isn't it? The sort of the grand strategy, working the map, moving your faction around, growing your resources, all that stuff. So I'm fascinated to see how that works when you're working with planets rather than working with countries and with
planets, you know, that you can explode if you don't need them anymore.
All that stuff is going to be, it's going to be joyous. So that's fun. Right, the big question from today's show, which is when our producers come up with some something behind our backs whilst we are recording and ask us a question, it is, if there is one video game that is the place, it's actually a sensible question this time, if there is one video game that is the place for a complete stranger to to the world of Warhammer to start their 40K journey, which game is it and why? Sounds like we're saying Rogue Trader, Dave.
Depends what you want. Do you want like lore and to like learn the background of 40K, or do you want to feel like you're in 40K? Because I would say that because of the broader appeal of Space Marine 2, that there is so much to appreciate in there. Even if you know nothing about Warhammer, nothing about 40K, don't know what an Astartes is, don't know who the Emperor is, you can appreciate how cool it looks to drag a chainsword through a giant space bug.
Yeah.
And if that's your jumping off point to then learn about the Codex Astartes and the Horus Heresy, completely valid. And many, many people have started their journey just because of a cool hill in a video game.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a power fantasy that you can just live out and get the feeling of what it is like in that awful place that is the 41st millennium. So that's a good answer there. So if you want to know what's the backstory and stuff, then maybe try Rogue Trader. But if you want to know what it feels like to get that, you know, emotional connection with the space, with the setting, then try Space Marine 2. Right, trivia was this week. According to the Guinness World Records, the 1986 Bubble Bobble was the first to do what? Dave, you said it was to give you branching options.
Dialogue options.
I'm going to, that sounds like the best option we've got, actually. So I'll stay the same. Sorry, I'm going to jump on your bandwagon there. But actually, we're both wrong. The answer was, based on the player's performance, there were alternate endings. All right. There was a bad ending, a single player, a good ending for two player, and a true ending when beating the game in super mode.
Well, I would have never got the true ending because I was not very good at Bubble Bobble.
So there we have it. Thank you very much for your question. Keep those questions coming in to our trivia channel. Dave, it's been a joy doing this, to geek out with you for an hour or so on Warhammer games. It's been brilliant. And like you say, no better time to be into this stuff. So it's been brilliant. So thank you very much for being with us.
No, thank you for having me. Always happy to nerd out about Warhammer, and I'm sure that will continue off air as well.
Of course it will. Basically this is your penance, isn't it, essentially, for being a fallen member of the Dark Angels. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to curry favour with the God Emperor.
What are you trying to accuse me of?
That's what's happening here.
The watchers in your dark are going to be in front of your bed tonight, I'm afraid.
Oh, God. Right, well, that is it for this episode of Press X. Let us know, what do you think of our top five idea? I mean, like I say, we're not reinventing the wheel here, but it is fun to do something a bit different here on the channel, on the podcast. So let us know what you think. Get involved on the Discord. Find us on TikTok and Instagram. Be part of the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. And we will be back next Tuesday for some more fun. Until then, bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be Passenger Princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps, Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.